International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Hello, and welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam 5, and thank you for downloading and listening to episode 22. The question to be contemplated on this show is, are human beings a part of nature? If we evolved here on Earth, why did we evolve into a species that no longer belongs here on Earth? Or have we? Listener response to that question, shoutouts, emails, and Frapper Map welcomes, my personal blabberings about humanity and nature, a few wild tangents to run off on, I'm sure, and whatever else leaps down from the ceiling to latch itself onto my head will be coming up after this.
Yours, a thrilling new cleaning discovery. Yes, to give you faster, easier cleaning than any other cleanser, we've activated Seismitide in Old Dutch Cleanser. When there's a sink to clean, a touch of Old Dutch Cleanser works dazzling magic. Just see new Sudsing Old Dutch Cleanser go to work. It dissolves grease on contact. Quickly, easily, its sudsing action sweeps away dirt and stains. Snowy white Old Dutch Cleanser cleans fast, safe, sure. Leaves no gritty sediment. Rinses away completely. Doesn't clog drains. Get two cans of Old Dutch Cleanser. One for the kitchen, one for the bathroom. Old Dutch Cleanser, the only cleanser made with activated Seismitide.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Neville.
And you're listening to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
What broke the window anyhow? A bullet?
I don't think so, no. Look here on the floor.
A rock with a paper tied to it.
Atop of the show, shout out and welcome to Nev from Does My Geek Look Big In This for becoming member number 14 on the IDD FOS Frapper Map. Thank you and welcome. Nev set his map pin way over there in Reading, England, right there with Sarah's. Makes perfect sense. And along with his pin came the message, no brain, no pain. And I didn't think of it at the time I saw the pin when I first saw it, but later on it struck me how modern language has speeded things up. The ancients wrote, he who stores up knowledge stores up grief. And here Nev is hit on the exact same concept and expressed it in four syllables. Well, I'm right there with no brain, no pain. On many a day at work, if ignorance is bliss, I've found nirvana. But thanks once again for adding your pin to the map, Nev. A thank you and a warm welcome also to Smartest One, also known as Daniel O, all the way up there in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Smartest One is the new Frapper member that brings our map number to 15. Thank you for placing your pin and joining the best of the best of the best with honors. Sorry, I just watched that film recently. And of course, any new listeners are welcomed and encouraged to join the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space Frapper Map. It's easy to reach with a single click at the top of our page. And that's easy to reach through www.anim5.com. That's the first four letters of the word animation, anim, and the number five. This week's exclusive map member role-playing menu is candied rhubarb, french fries, and little yellow marshmallow chicks, all to be washed down with grape soda. I know, we started out with Chateau Clément 71 and fine Italian pastries, but you never know what the snackmobile is going to bring by for the map members from one week to the next. Next, listener email.
Say, let's see what that paper tied to the rock says.
Oh, I've forgotten all about that for the moment. You untie it, Speed.
Okay.
This email is a response to the question from episode 21, the question to be contemplated in today's show. It comes from Nev, and reads thus. Hi, Adam. Sarah forwarded me your question, so here goes. Question. Are human beings a part of nature? If we evolved here on Earth, why did we evolve into a species that no longer belongs here on Earth? Or have we? Answer. According to Nev, yes. We most certainly are a part of nature. In fact, I will venture further and suggest that there is no entity, no matter how small, however low in energy or mass, that cannot be considered a part of nature.
But surely a steel bar cannot be a part of nature. It's unnatural.
I hear you cry. Well, yes, you would be right to say that it was not created naturally. Steel bars are made by machines and factories. That's not natural. Then again, heavy elements such as lead and iron are created within the violent cores of stars. Two factories, albeit of different nature. There's that word again. Creating the same kind of thing. Just because intelligence is involved in one of them, does that make it unnatural? This is really my whole case. Humans are a part of nature, just as everything is a part of nature. Just because we have intelligence, why can't the things we create also be deemed part of nature? As to the second half of your question, do we not belong on Earth? Of course we belong on Earth. We belong anywhere we can exist. We still belong here on Earth, but you're right, I don't think we'll belong here forever. Hope this answer wasn't too hand-wavy. I was never good at debating in philosophy. Thanks for the shout-outs of Does My Geek on your show. We really do appreciate it. By the way, thank you for the birthday message. It was very kind. Take it easy, Nev. Well, thank you very much for that response, Nev. And, of course, you're more than welcome, always. Shout-outs for Does My Geek make perfect sense because it's just a fun show. Fine piece of work. Thank you for producing it. Thank you both, to you and Sarah. And happy birthday again. Anyway, it's Nev's response that will receive all of the attention as a listener answer for this week's question. So it's a damn good thing for me that he wrote such a good one. And it's going to be the launch point and the centerpiece of this week's discussion, so I hope listeners won't mind if I replay bits and pieces of it as we go along, because he makes some very important points. But we'll jump right into the discussion of Nev's letter as soon as we complete shout-outs and feedback. So to move along with that, I have two more emails to read. This one is a response from Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big In This? And it's feedback about episode 20, the one that announced sweeping changes to the show and the format. And she writes as follows.
Hiya. Although I totally respect that you're working to improve your shows, I've just listened to the first few minutes of episode 20, and I have to say, I love your shows just as they are. They're wonderful, funny, thoughtful. I even like the traffic. It adds atmosphere. I love the way you host and the way you express yourself. Whilst listening, I often laugh. This is very important. I also think about the shows long after I've finished listening. They do not get deleted from my iTunes after being played. I know I'm only one listener, but don't change too much. Sarah.
You know, first of all, thank you, Sarah. Thank you very much. You know, I'm often told that I'm my own worst critic. Mrs. Adam 5 reminds me of that when I mope around and start mumbling about fixing this and changing that and shouting at myself as I listen to my own recordings. Get on with it! Or, Adam, do you plan on coming to any point in particular? You know, there's such a thing as one simple statement, Mr. Can't Finish a Sentence. So, as a relatively new podcaster, I take a lot of comfort, and I feel a lot better about what I'm doing when I receive praise of this caliber. And so, I do indeed have to thank you. Among those points you listed about the show that you value, the two that inspire me the most to continue with IDDFOS is that you've been able to laugh and that you've thought about the material long after hearing it. To me, that's like hitting the bullseye and then splitting the arrow. And as you've probably been able to hear, hopefully, through this episode and through episode 21, there really hasn't been too much of a change. I'm just trying to pick up the beat, you know, pace it better, take a more direct route to what I'm trying to say. And along with that, as I said when I wrote you back, along with that, just putting a few audio rhinestones from the past, those little audio snippets from the days of radio, just to give a kind of an antique glow to the proceedings. Do I glow with pride when I get an email like that? Of course I do. Anybody would. I'm as human as the next podcaster. So, thank you indeed, Sarah. If you haven't heard any other episode of IDD FOS, and you've never heard of Nev, never heard of Sarah, never heard of Does My Geek, then this is something you should know. Sarah and Nev produce a show called Does My Geek Look Big In This, and it's the kind of fun listening you can enjoy episode after episode by clicking on their direct link on the IDD FOS page and going to their site. The next email falls under the category of How Much Better Can Anim 5's Week Get? It's from Mick Bradley of the House of the Harping Monkey, the fantasy tavern across the street from the Dragon's Landing Inn. The House of the Harping Monkey brings you the geeky goodness of The Round Table, Misfit Brew, The Guide to Vegas After Midnight, and no, we're not talking about a Nevada tourist pamphlet. It's the serialized audio guide to the role-playing game, read by the talented Leah Bradley, and a variety of bonus episodes and side dishes. Treat yourself to more fun listening by clicking on their direct link from the IDD FOS page. Look for Roundtable and Misfit Brew. But the letter, here it is.
Anim. Okay. I just finally got to your episode 20, and you've inspired me to finally write you and let you know that, honestly, what you say, what you ponder on your podcast is absolutely marvelous. Honestly, there are few people I know or that I've ever heard who possess the kind of wonderfully misfit insights that you regularly share with us on IDD FOS. KJ Johnson, one of my co-hosts, has a similar wit and panache, and I'm fortunate to have him at the House of the Harping Monkey. But you, sir, have wisdom and style in spades. And talent? Yikes, your mini-dramas are so cool. The only thing about your show that ever gave me pause was that, as you put it, you competed with cement mixers and city noises, and your general sound quality was not always easy to endure. But you know that, and you've decided to do something about it, and that's wonderful. Mind you, I think I'd listen even if you didn't improve your sound quality, but it does add to the experience. Anyhow, I just thought it was high time to give you the props you deserve, and I love your new promo, and will play it on my shows as soon as I am able. Keep up the great work. I look forward to episode 21, which I see is now up, so I guess I have more to listen to. Regards, Mick Bradley.
I resume recording here after an interlude of me dancing, which you are most fortunate not to have witnessed, and after attempting to go and pour myself a fresh cup of coffee, which had to be done only after forcing my head through the doorway of my recording room. That's to be expected after reading two emails like that in a row. Thank you, Mick Bradley. Those of you that are new to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space may not know, but in episode 3, back on May 4th, I made mention of and I listed a number of podcasts with their descriptions that I particularly enjoy. And of course, the Roundtable was one of them. And one of those regular audio gifts that I'd treat myself to, among the others, like Dragon's Landing and Gamer the Podcasting, that inspired me to create this show in the first place. And later on, of course, I discovered Does My Geek Look Big In This and All Games Considered and The Bears Grow. But it just gets better and better for listening. So getting this kind of encouragement from podcasters like Sarah herself and Mick Bradley himself, and Nev. It's energizing. Thank you. Well, this episode has been great fun for me so far, but I'll move along after this break and get to the heart of the matter with discussion centering on Nev's response to this week's question. Back in a bit.
Yo-ho, yo-ho, brush, let's all have our voice, whichever use the notion.
50 cents for shaving cream, a dollar for the lotion.
Old Spice means quality, said the captain to the bosun. So look for the package with the ship that sails the ocean. Yo-ho, yo-ho.
In the response that Nev wrote in, his viewpoint seems to be a very pragmatic one. It's a conclusion drawn from the evidence right in front of all of us. We are a product of nature, an emergent property of the interaction of universal energies. The current name given to it is evolution. And as an extension, this is what I'm interpreting anyway from what I read, as an extension, anything we are or that we create should be considered a part of that process as well. And that's a very broad and practical viewpoint. In effect, Nev also broadens the definition of nature, if it has one really, to include all of observable reality. And I think traditionally that's what its definition was. If I'm wrong about that, someone else write in. But I find that it's the questions Nev asks in his response that really state the core of the mystery and the basis of this show's question, the steel bar question. If we make a steel bar and we set it down next to a pile of lead ore or iron ore, well, as he said, essentially, both are metals, both are the result of a process. In the case of the lead, it's the process by which all the heavy metals came to be in the first place, atomically formed in the high energy heat and pressure of stars. That's not something that's often taught, by the way. The fact that this solar system coalesced out of dusts, celestial, universal galactic dusts that are left over from billions and billions and billions of years ago, as Carl Sagan used to say, he was all jazzed up about the fact that the calcium in your teeth was cooked in the core of stars that exploded billions of years ago. That's not something that's generally thought about a lot or taught. But anyway, where the heavy metals came from, in the case of the iron ore. In the case of the steel bar, it's the manipulation of heat and the molten fluid separation of impurities done by human skill. Now, you can argue that one is natural and one is artificial, and in one respect you'd be correct, but in another respect, it would be a pointless argument, because where precisely do you draw the line between natural and artificial? At what point did the iron ore used for the steel bar become unnatural? Or in fact, can the term unnatural be anything but a nonsense term? Because human skill and ingenuity are an outgrowth of the very same forces of nature that made the iron ore. I see his point. I see Nev's point, and I see that I have a very distinctly flavored view of what the term nature means. I put forward the question starting out with a much narrower view of what nature is. At least that's what I'm getting from this. And it should have been a priority for me to define that before I asked a very sweeping question like today's question. It seems to me that I personally draw the line between natural and artificial pretty early in the human behavioral process. I think I draw that distinction between natural and unnatural the instant a human being makes a spear or retains body heat with an animal fur. So I guess I focus down a definition of nature, or at least in my mind I formed a definition of what I think nature is. That's probably more closely akin to the terms biosphere and ecosystem, rather than all things the way they are as we can observe them. And I think for the longest time I've separated the human animal from nature and my understanding of it by the distinct human activity of manipulating the environment into the defenses and the attributes that allow other animals to survive and thrive. What are you talking about, Adam? I should give an example. Here's one. For some reason, whatever it is, the human animal evolved to have much less protective skin than other life forms of roughly the same size. Cuts, scrapes, bruises, rashes, stings, all relatively minor injuries, but they're far easier to inflict on the hide of a human rather than than on a wolf or a horse or a cheetah, for instance. There's also the aspect of temperature. With fur grown naturally on a wolf's body, it is better able to withstand low temperature blasts of wind in a harsh winter setting than a naked human. It's common sense. It's point of fact. And that's not to say that the wolf and the horse and the cheetah are immune to punctures or extreme temperatures. It's just that the humans are far more susceptible and vulnerable to scrapes and bug bites and freezing to death. So the human manipulates a piece of the environment into fur skins and sandals and tents. The natural protection was evolved away from the animal human. A natural survival trait was taken away. So the human being makes use of the intelligence to manipulate the environment to replace them. Another example, wolves and cheetahs can run down and capture food by virtue of exceptional speed. They've got sharp grasping claws, and they have long, sharp, puncturing teeth. The human animal does not possess running speed high enough to catch a gazelle or even a rabbit. For that matter, humans do not possess the speed to escape most running predators. Anything like claws or even toughened nails were evolved away from the human animal, along with the killing jaws and the teeth of the baboon, and of course we got nothing even close to the teeth and jaws of a lion or an alligator. So these comparative weaknesses are a part of the evolved physical nature of the human body. It makes the relative livable areas on Earth for humans who don't manipulate the environment pretty small. The temperate zones that undergo gentle temperature changes from day to night and from season to season. And they have to hold an abundance of naturally growing fruits and vegetables that are edible by humans and may be small prey that can be caught barehanded and killed by humans. And even at that, they're regularly swept by hurricane weather and tidal waves to decrease human numbers even further, if human beings were never to expand beyond those areas. So what about this? What about the artificial response that allows a human to live in an area where winter hits yearly? The response is to copy the cheetah's claws and teeth with sharp stone daggers, and copy the chasing speed of any of the fast predators with thrown hatchets and spears. Basically, the human animal manipulates the environment to obtain the advantages that the physical human animal has evolved away and make use of the only attribute emerging from that evolutionary process, intelligence, to take pieces of nature and make them unnatural. This apparently is a tendency that has continued at an ever-accelerating pace to the extent that now it threatens not only humans as a species, but all of the natural world. So the question develops, as usual in most of these shows, develops more questions, or it has sub-questions. There's a twofold mystery involved. One, if human survival was to take place, then manipulation of the environment, as I said, was a must. Not developing and refining skills at changing what is natural into the unnatural would mean the human animal would perish from exposure, starvation, predation, infection, or all of the above. So was the line that evolved into Homo sapiens actually meant to become extinct? And if it wasn't, why evolve away the inborn natural defenses and instincts enjoyed by all the other creatures? What evolutional mechanism caused a specific branch of primates to become less capable of survival by nature of gradually diminishing their natural physical defenses? And two, where did the intelligence come from? Did a larger cranial capacity and increased intelligence over time cause the loss of the thick hide, cause poorer night vision, cause a diminished sense of smell, duller, smaller teeth, slower speed? Did intelligence cause those things because those animal defenses were gradually less vital? Or was it the gradual loss of those natural animal attributes which spurred on the increased intelligence by necessity? I don't know. There may be textbooks out there that I'm just not reading that explain all of this, but I don't know. And regardless of what the correct answer is to that chicken and egg question, I think what I'm struggling with mainly here, especially when I say, do we belong on Earth, or have we evolved into something that no longer belongs here? The question I'm asking is, or struggling with, is how is it that a biosphere could evolve an organism like humans with an attribute like self-awareness and intelligence, which has only end results that are harmful to the biosphere itself? Intelligence is an attribute that unbalances every ecosystem within that biosphere. Other animals spread seed, defecate to enrich the soil, and remain within balance because they don't possess intelligence. They only possess the natural instincts and preservation, physicality, whatever that they're given. Humans make plastic spoons and dump oil in the ocean. Well, I'm going to take a break after that. I know I need one. You probably do too. Back in a bit.
It's a warning. It's a warning to Joe.
Nonsense. I won't have it.
What I want to know is how those lights were turned off. No one was within 6 feet of that switch.
But the baby, the warning.
Doc, you stand there right beside that switch from now on.
Okay, fella. I'd like to see it. Oh! Oh!
Job! Job!
He's been shot through the head.
The gun with the silencer.
Yes.
Oh, Job, darling. Oh, Joe, Joe. Didn't I tell you? Didn't I tell you? They want all of us dead.
I've been wondering what might be a more fun way of examining this, or at least illustrating it without going on about it in my usual droning manner, and I thought I might try some play acting. Are you surprised? So have a listen to this.
Hello, I am Cecil.
And I am Beanie.
We are no relation to the puppets, whatever they are.
We are a hypothetical representation of Homo sapiens without the sape.
In other words, we are here to show you a pair of ripe Charlies what have evolved the kind of bodies you have today, but do not have the intelligence God gave a door knocker, whatever that is.
We speak through the medium of language simply to illustrate the point, but of course, hypothetically, we possess no such skill. Our play begins.
Hello, Beanie.
Hello, Cecil. Are you hungry today?
Of course, aren't you?
Why, no, for I have dined my fill on bugs and rotten berries I have found by wandering for hours and trying to sniff out food.
At this point, a heavy hail falls from the sky.
Ow.
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 The hot pebbles from the sky hurt my thin and delicate hairless skin.
Ow.
Let us run into the cave yonder to escape this pain.
You are right. We are very intelligent for having sought this shelter.
Nonsense, Cecil. It is no more than any four-legged creature would do out of instinct. And we still possess some of that, at least.
We will wait here in cold and misery until the hard hail stops, for we cannot make fire, being both as thick as tree trunk cigars.
And so we wait.
We are boned.
Here, if I were intelligent, I would know that it is foolish to run, for on our inferior and weak human legs, we cannot run faster than the bear that is chasing us.
I do not have intelligence, but I know that I do not have to run faster than the bear.
You don't?
No, I only have to run faster than you.
If I were intelligent, I would have seen that joke coming.
Beanie, stab the bear with your spear.
I cannot manipulate my environment in order to create a spear. Ow.
Then hit the bear with your weak and ineffectual clawless human fist.
It has already eaten my fist, Cecil.
Well then, the joke is on you, for nature has defeated you. You are extinct now. Achoo. Curses. I seem to have caught pneumonia and have been bitten by several dozen varieties of blood-sucking insects. Down I go to oblivion to join the dodo and disco music, whatever that is.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
For anything pertaining to cars, the best man in town to see is your DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And he wants you to know you're always welcome when you walk through his doors. He considers it a pleasure to show you the two great new cars he sells. The beautiful new DeSoto and the handsome new Plymouth. Your DeSoto Plymouth dealer is proud of his fine line of used cars, of every make and model. He wants you to see his modern service shop, where master technicians use the finest equipment there is to do a really expert service job, and to do it faster, which means a saving to you. Not only that, you'll notice the folks who work in his shops, offices, and showroom not only believe in courtesy, they practice it. Yes, that's the DeSoto Plymouth dealer in your neighborhood. Why not stop in and see him tomorrow?
Part 2. A more authentic recreation showing Homo sapiens having evolved with the sape and making use of the earliest actual Homo sapien language. Subtitles have been provided.
Oh, hello, Beanie. Cecil, good morning. Hungry today? Of course. Aren't you? Why, no. I'm still digesting that marvelous dinner you and Genevieve gave last night. Wonderful roast boar. However did you catch it? I simply dug a pit and lined it with spikes, Beanie. Not the easiest method, you know, but worked a treat for catching those tasty big oinkers. I see we're in for a spot of weather. I care to wait it out in that cave over there. Excellent idea, Cecil. Here, I brought my drum along, and perhaps you can tell a few of your filthy stories we all like so much. Splendid. Yes, of course. Well, that's got the fire going. Fancy a rabbit leg? No, thank you, but do go ahead. We're boned. Nonsense, Cecil. It's just a bear. Look, here, you and I both have our intelligently handcrafted spears. Let's just add the hairy bugger to tonight's menu, eh? Of course, what was I thinking? Mind like a sieve. You know, Beanie, I found out through intelligent trial and error that certain leaves and fruits can add a magnificent new taste to some of these creatures once you roast them for a while. Not really. No, it's true. I call them spices. Well, fancy that. You must show us all some evening. Oh, of course. Gurukatingatongatong. What? Gurukatingatongatong. What on earth do show notes have to do with anything?
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
A girl in the Yuruk tribe in Turkey can become engaged only once in her lifetime. This rule holds even if her fiancé dies before the wedding. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the statue that was executed for murder. In the 5th century B.C., a statue erected to Theagenes of Tassos, Greece, for winning 1,300 Olympic awards, was flogged nightly by a jealous rival. One night, while the jealous man was beating the statue, it toppled over and crushed him to death. Because the statue had killed a man, the act had to be punished. Therefore, the marble figure was tried for murder, convicted, and sentenced to be thrown into the sea, thus executing it for murder. Believe it or not.
In keeping with the new feature of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, the free old-time radio show. This week, it's a radio sitcom. Before the term sitcom came about, Hancock's Half Hour, a comedy classic from the United Kingdom. The episode is entitled The Wild Man of the Forest, and it takes a somewhat lighter look at man's place in nature, as you'll discover from this 1 minute and 30 second mashup. Check it out.
With you, my children. He touched me. He touched me.
Oh, lucky you.
I'm going back to nature. I'm going to renounce all my worldly goods and live in the woods.
Where?
Clapham Common. Open the window. I'm just going to shout my last defiant message to the world. You're doomed! All of you! Mankind is doomed! Return to nature before it's too late!
Yeah.
What?
I love your loincloth.
Do you?
Yes. Very racy. Oh, yeah. Lovely.
I made it myself.
You didn't.
I did.
Ooh, I wish I was clever with my hands like that.
Ooh, how do you fancy him, Gertz? Ooh, how'd you like to find him under your bed, eh?
Clear off, come on, clear off. I'd sling me boomerang at you if it didn't keep hitting me on the way back.
That episode in its entirety was first broadcast in England on January 24th, 1957. It's just plain fun to listen to. It's 30 minutes long, and it's free with my thanks to you for giving it a listen. You'll find the link for downloading that in this week's Gudikadingadungadungs. I'm a little disappointed in not being able to find a record album that I know is in my basement. What album? That's just it. I'm not sure. I only know that it's one of the LPs I bought centuries ago by Isao Tomita, or Tomita, depending on how you pronounce it and where you bought it. It's probably the Pictures at an Exhibition album. Tomita is one of the major figures in modern electronic musical composition. He's right up there with Walter Carlos or Wendy Carlos, depending on which era and which album you've bought. And he wrote something on the liner notes side of the album that cropped back up into what I am pleased to call my mind. Something I recalled the very first time I read Nev's response to this week's question. Tomita was responding to a few of his colleagues, his musical colleagues, that did not consider his work to be that of a true musician. I'm going from memory now. If anybody's got this album and can quickly pull it out and read the back of it, or maybe transcribe or send it in to me, I'd really appreciate it. I'm going to look again. I don't know, I might not find it, but I'm going from memory here. And their claim, his colleague's claim, was that he couldn't be considered a genuine musician because in their purest mindset, his method of producing music was completely artificial. Well, what he pointed out was that every method used by every musician to produce music, with the exception of the human voice, is artificial. He pretty much wrote, a violin is every bit as man-made and artificial an object as a Moog synthesizer. I know that. I know I have that album down there somewhere. I really wish I could have read what he wrote verbatim, because it resonated really closely with what one of the things that Nev was referring to. There's another work also that resonates very closely, not only with what Nev wrote, specifically the line,
do we not belong on Earth? Of course we belong on Earth. We belong anywhere we can exist. We still belong here on Earth, but you're right, I don't think we'll belong here forever.
It not only resonates with that, but it also resonates with nearly everything International Detective Dragons from Outer Space has paid any kind of attention to since Podcast 1. What work is that, Adam? It was brought to my attention several installments ago by Derek from Texas, also known as Agent Desilu. And that work is the book Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. I wasn't kidding when I said I'd get a hold of it, and I did. I ordered it through Amazon, and it arrived yesterday. Was it yesterday? I think, or was it Friday? Can't recall. I know that I began reading it at 2:30 in the morning on Saturday, and finished it by 6:30 in the morning on Saturday. I was exhausted from that book, and also from the insane hours I chose to read it. But I must say that it has content and messages that it'll make this week's question resurface in another episode soon to come. Not next week's, but it's going to come back. It's really a shame the delivery of it didn't happen sooner, because once I finished reading it, I realized that it was a book written exactly in answer to today's question. From cover to cover, it's got one revolutionary idea after another, not only about human evolution, but about many of the other questions pondered on IDDFOS. There just isn't enough time for me to get my head together for a full examination of what that book said and how it affected me or my views. I will say this, it frustrated me to no end. The book frustrated the hell out of me, and it made me very angry and very resentful. But I urge you to get a copy of Ishmael by Daniel Quinn and Daniel Quinn and see for yourself. Give it a read. Humanity's place on Earth and as a part of nature is just too broad a topic for one episode. But I'm not going to make this a two-parter. I want to be able to give Quinn's work the attention it should get. But I'm going to need more sleep and thought to do that. So I'm not going to pick this up again next week. I need more time. And I want to give you more time to send in your responses if you'd be kind enough to do so. If anyone out there listening would like a second shot at sending in a response to this week's question, please do so, by all means. The address is anim5@anim5.com. Next up will be a piece of music for the end of the show, after which I'll be saying my goodbyes. But before the music, next week's question will be daydreams and night dreams. What are they? Does everyone in the world have them in pretty much the same way? Do the ones that make the least sense hold the most truth? And what are yours? The question of humanity and nature will be taken up in a later show along with Ishmael and any additional feedback you send in on today's topic. But please feel free to send in feedback and your thoughts and impressions and comments on anything you've heard in any IDDFOS episode, all the way up to now, as I've always said. Now then, please enjoy this music.
The trustees have a few suggestions they would like to submit to you.
I think you know what the trustees can do with their suggestions. I don't know what they have to say. It makes no difference anyway. Whatever it is, I'm against it. No matter what it is or who commenced it, I'm against it. Your proposition may be good, but let's have one thing understood. Whatever it is, I'm against it. And even when you've changed it or condensed it, I'm against it. I'm opposed to it. On general principles, I'm opposed to it.
He's opposed to it. In fact, indeed, that he's opposed to it.
For months before my son was born, I used to yell from night till morn, whatever it is, I'm against it. And I've kept yelling since I first commenced it. I'm against it.
Knowing Dad as I do, I'd not advise you to displease him or tease him. No, no, don't double-cross him or toss him around. When dear old Dad once gets mad, he's a hound.
My son is right, I'm quick to fight, I'm from a fighting clan. When I'm abused or badly used, I always get my man. No matter if he's in Peru, Paducah, or Japan, I go ahead alive or dead, I always get my man. I soon dispose of all of those who put me on the pan. Like Shakespeare said to Nathan Hale, I always get my man.
And so we reach the close of episode 22. Thanks very much indeed again to Nev and Sarah and Mick Bradley, and to Smartest One, and to Derek for recommending Ishmael, and thank you, of course, for listening. I hope you're back next week. I hope all goes well for you until then. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.